You're listening to Red Setter, your guide to digital cinema, filmmaking, and cutting-edge imaging.
Hi, and welcome to this week's Red Center. I'm Mike Seymour, coming to you from Tokyo, or actually Japan, not actually in Tokyo. I'm outside Tokyo at the moment. I'm in Kyoto, but my good friend Jason Wingrove is in fact in Sydney. How are you, sir?
Konnichiwa, Sumo-san. No, that's not right.
Mike-san. Konnichiwa. Hey, okay. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Freezing my ass off here in Sydney, I must say. It's the cold snap has kicked in, so enjoy what's probably quite warm Kyoto weather there while you can, my friend.
Actually, it's extremely humid here. It's really, really hot, yeah.
We're walking around so many fronts.
We just got to Kyoto. Yesterday we went sightseeing. We had a break in proceedings, and we went to a ninja castle. And the thing about this that's just so cool is that all the floorboards are made to creak. I mean, actually make what they call the nightingale floorboards, make a kind of chirpy sound so that it can ninja-proof. And we just love the idea that you had such a ninja problem that you had to have your house ninja-proofed.
Everybody else's house has like a rat problem or whatever. What is a ninja castle, for goodness sake?
It was like a castle that was from the 17th century, and when they were building it, they decided they had such a ninja problem that they'd ninja-proof it. And so we were trying to go around the place. I mean, it's beautiful, obviously, and lovely architecture and extraordinary gardens, but nevertheless, we were just intrigued by the whole ninja-proofing thing. And then I started thinking, you must have had a ninja testing center, right? Like, we think we've perfected the floorboards, and then they get a bunch of test ninja guys who come through, and they come out and they go, guys, I'm sorry to tell you this, but, you know, you shouldn't have so many places for grappling hooks on the side. We just leapt from side of the building to side of the building. Right. And there were moats and there were all sorts of clever anti-ninja proceedings. So, yeah, every home should have one.
Terrific. And you've been to one of my top 10 places on Earth, no doubt, Akihabara or Electric City.
Electric City, yes. It's so funny when you come off the train and it's like, turn left for Electric City. Take me to Funky Town. And it was great. And I was geeking out there. I'm actually here in Japan shooting with Stu Mashewitz and John Montgomery for an upcoming course that actually, I think, starts in a week, basically. It's
excellent.
It's digital cinematography using DLSRs. So we're looking at the whole issue of DLSRs and how seriously...
DLSR. You're going to have to get that right if you're going to do a course on it.
What did I say?
Sorry, just minor thing. DLSRs.
Yes, a DRSR. And yes, but the whole idea is to see how seriously you can shoot with these cameras. And we've been having a bunch of really cool shoots up here, and I'll get back to that in a minute. But
excellent.
It's hot and it's fun, and we went to Electric City and bathed in the air conditioning glory of a store that had every conceivable sort of camera lens. Oh, my God, it was just extraordinary. We were
Now, to people who haven't been there, it's essentially like almost like a suburb like Ginza, where you just essentially a shopping district, which is all tech. So you could essentially, I mean, it's been like 9 or 10 years since I've been, but essentially you can go to essentially like a department store, you know, like the third floor is cameras, fourth floor is GPS or whatever, and fifth floor is audio equipment. So it's just like, wear your adult diapers before
and if
heading
you go,
in and leave
if you
your
go behind those department stores, there's these kind of Blade Runner-esque little booths with the guy that just sells the W key on keyboards, and we've found whole booth like little stores, and all they sold was multimeters. Another place only sold whacked out security camera little things, and you know, there's kitschy stuff, obviously, like, you know, plug in your USB dog humping your keyboard plug, but there's also just, you know, every form of cable connector, you name it, it's there, and it is phenomenal. I mean, we specialized in just trying to look at cameras, and that was just extraordinary. But it's great because they have all the cameras there. You know, they're like these enormous Canon lenses hooked up, and we were like happily shooting with those. And we'd taken along our own compact cards and stuff, and we're sticking our own cards in the cameras to get shots and test things out.
Oh, yes. Very good idea. Yes. I always forget to do that.
Yes, and look, the awesome accessories as well. Like, you know, we were looking, you and I in Sydney, at the Olympus Pen at the trade show there.
But they had these slightly disappointing Olympus Pen, but anyway.
Slightly disappointing, but the accessories for it are extraordinary. Lovely leather sort of things, and of course they had like hundreds of them there at the store. So
Yeah, it's a little bit all show and no go. But anyway, and as you say, you've been shooting a bit with that, so we'll hear a bit about that through you at some stage.
Yes, in fact, we're going to cross to Stu. When Stu and I were coming from Tokyo to Kyoto yesterday, I recorded a bit on the bullet train, which was the Super Express. And boy, does that sucker move. It's extraordinary how smooth a high-speed train like that is, given how fast you're flying at, like 180 miles an hour. Smooth.
So where did you go from to on the
Tokyo, Yokohama, right through to Kyoto?
Right.
Excellent. So, a very, very pleasant journey, but it was a little noisy when we were recording, but you guys, I'm sure, will forgive us for that. It was the fun of recording on a train.
Excellent. Well, we'll cross that little later on.
And now, the Red Setter News.
So, what's been happening in the news since I've been away? You've been monitoring the nets?
Oh, trying to. If anything, something would actually happen. It's a pretty slow week in Redland, and just in general, I think. There's a bit of slow down here in Sydney. It's the end of the financial year, so things have kind of ground to a halt. There's a few things happening, but got quite slow, I must say, generally and work wise and script wise, but it's starting to pick up a little bit. But now we're into the new financial year. We have a different financial year here to the States, June, July. What the very minor thing, Ted is going to put together a new red reel for IBC, which is in September in Amsterdam. So if you saw and I don't know how you could miss it, the red reel from NAB was absolutely fantastic. So if you want to be a part of that reel, the next phase of that, then obviously get in touch with Red by August 1 to have your material looked at to possibly be accepted into that reel. So that'll be fantastic.
And they're actually presenting that with Avid, right?
Yeah, they're having a bit of a doing it in conjunction with Avid. So I think ideally they're looking for stuff that was cut on Avid, which is obviously going to narrow things down a little bit. But I'm sure they'll look outside the square there if you've got some awesome footage. So yeah, they're going to be presenting in a giant digital cinema theatre with Avid. So, I've got links to that for the show notes, but also you can find that on Red User. But that'd be fantastic. If you look at how well the last Red Reel went down with everybody at NAB, then obviously it'd really be great to be involved with this one.
Yeah, and we have our own conference coming up before then, which is the SMPTE exhibition in Sydney, July 21 to 24th. I'm chairing a session there on the future of cameras and where the directions are going in terms of how we're going to cope beyond what we have now as the market changes. And that's part of a sort of a subsection of the SMPTE conference, which is being put on by the Australian Cinematographers Society. So I'm looking forward to that. Got a good bunch of people coming in, sort of being on that panel.
Yeah, that's July 21 to 24 in Sydney at the Sydney Convention Centre. SMPTE.com.au if you want to register. And if you really want to be geeky, twitter.com/SMPTE_Australia. Yes, lots of people staring at waveforms.
Well, but it's not just that.
I still love going. It's definitely...
There's a little bit more than that. I agree that is a substantial
There is
part.
A lot of waveform staring.
That is true. Though in Australia, though compared to other places, Australia, SMPTE is one of the few kind of conferences that we actually have that's of that nature. So it tends to have a bunch of stuff piled into it in much the same way that NAB has more than just for broadcasters themselves. If you are in town, that'll be good. And
absolutely.
John Bowring is joining me on that panel, and Callan Green, who's very good, who's actually recently did stuff with the Canon 5D. Tom Gleason, who we saw talk at the time we missed out on the dancer, and Dave McFarlane as well from the Red User Group.
Excellent.
So I believe that's the panel.
Fantastic.
Put together by the ACS.
Wonderful. Obviously, there's lots of other conferences going on.
Yes, but I want to plug this talk that I'm at because, what's the point of having your own podcast if you can't plug something that's happening on Tuesday the 21st at 4:30 in the afternoon?
If you miss this talk by Mike, then you can just catch the next one. There'll be another one along in a few minutes.
Yes. Very droll, my friend.
Fabulous. Hey, can I get a free ticket to come in?
You absolutely can, yeah.
Excellent. All right. Good on you.
So... So, So the other thing that's been happening is some stuff with the 16 gigs cards, isn't that so, right?
Yeah, now I think this must have sort of snuck under the radar a little bit, because I've actually, the dates I've got for this issue is actually almost passed. There have been, I know I've seen a lot of people having issues with the 16 gig cards, some people being able, not able to read it on certain readers and having to sort of change readers to card readers to be able to read the cards. But Red's new 16 gig cards, apparently there has been some issues with the firmware, but now Red is having a, or was having a free upgrade program where obviously you could sort of, you know, send in your card and swap it over to a new one with the correct firmware. So there has been a little bit of issues there, but essentially every card shipped after March 16 will have the firmware upgrade. But if you've got one of the cards shipped before then and Red hasn't been in touch with you and you haven't found anything about this, then get in touch with Red and they will swap it over. But as I say, it says the no charge upgrade program was from April 1st to July 1st. So if we're outside that now, so maybe they're going to charge you for it. But anyway, get in touch with Red. And as I say, it was a little bit under the radar, but there was obviously some issues happening with people. But have you got a 16 gig card, Mike?
I am not shooting with the 16 gig cards. We're shooting mainly with drives, and we have 8 gig cards when we need them, but that's normally just for a shot for something that we otherwise can't do, but you know.
Yeah, there's plenty of them out there, plenty of people shooting with them.
I use an 8 gig Red card in my stills camera, actually. I use it in my 5D. It's bloody great cards.
Right, but in a DSLR, you're not really going to notice the difference between... I mean, I had pretty fast cards, but it's pretty hard to... Unless you've got a really crappy, you know, Kmart card, it's pretty, in my experience, hard to slow up a DSLR reading. But on the Red, definitely, there is no way out. There's no way around using anything but the Red cards, really.
Yeah, yeah. As we've discussed in the past, the specs on those things exceed the manufacturer's specs. They actually reject quite a lot of cards. So,
And obviously, as you can see, obviously with this issue, the firmware on the card is quite specifically tailored to shoot with the Red. So even Red having, you know, issues getting it just right. So you definitely just can't sort of grab anything in an emergency and just like, maybe you can in an emergency if you can get lucky, but you can also equally get incredibly unlucky. But yeah. Okay.
In a slow week of news, we've been inundated with annoying things to do with iPhones. Now, I like iPhones as much as the next guy, but please, for the love of God, why does everybody think that video in an iPhone is somehow revolutionary? I mean, I understand that it's cool. I understand it's quite useful. I understand that, you know, there are times that you'd be out and about and it'd be jolly handy, but it's not as if it's exceeding the specs of, I don't know, a whole lot of other phones with video in them, nor is it better than a HD, you know, Handycam, and it's certainly not worthy of sticking on a Red Rock Micro or producing stereoscopic rigs, for crying out loud.
Yeah. I mean, when I was at PMA the other day, I got got the brochure for a lot of those little the little Sanyo Exactis, which are just fantastic. I mean, I've got rid of all my tape sort of cameras, HDV cameras at home, and I've got the LX3, which is, you know, lovely camera, stills camera, but the video mode, I mean, it does 720p and it does manual control and there's no sort of rolling shutter or anything issue, so it's fabulous. But
hang on, wait, why is there no rolling shutter issues?
Because it is CCD, I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think, yeah, there's no rolling shutter with the LX3. But you know, as soon as you roll, you can't actually zoom in on the thing. It obviously the same issue with the iPhone video. There's no zoom on that. So I'm definitely looking for a video camera to have at home. And as I was looking at those little, you know, Sanyo Exactis, I mean, you know, they're little tiny little things to slip in your pocket. You've seen those little sort of tiny little, almost like little palm cams.
Yep.
Yeah, fantastic with little flip out things. And some of the images I was seeing off those things are just, you know, full HD onto a, you know, SD card or whatever. Just fantastic. So why, for the love of God, do we have to have this? I know that a lot of people here are doing this in tongue-in-cheek, and I loved Alex Lindsay's brilliant little video of him putting the iPhone on a Red Rock Micro rig, and it was just brilliant. And obviously, fully tongue-in-cheek.
I understand it's tongue-in-cheek, but I mean, it's it's starting to, not Alex, but it's starting to bug me just how many people are getting obsessed with producing, you know, video phone accessories. Is it just because people make so much money from other iPhone accessories? I mean, really, if you want to shoot video, is the best we can do kind of an iPhone? I mean, yeah. Hello. It's,
I mean,
if you are there on the grassy knoll.
Exactly. Yeah.
Totally.
Then terrific. Fantastic.
But the rolling shutter on the iPhone is horrendous.
That is the main reason why it's sort of getting up at is the rolling shutter is an incredible issue with a lot of cameras that are trying, not that the iPhone is, but a lot of cameras are starting to say, oh, this is, you know, like the Pentax, the K7, the D90, I'm sorry, but yes, it does. It's incredible rolling shutter. The Pen, I think is pretty bad at it. There's plenty of sort of cameras that are saying this is, you know, fantastic. We've got fantastic video mode on this camera, and I'm sorry, it just sucks. If anything says, I mean, apart from manual control and motion blur and all that sort of stuff, if anything says god awful video to me, it's rolling shutter skew.
If you just left it as a domestic video thing, I'd be fine. I don't have any problem with it. I'm not being. Yeah. I don't want to be, you know, shooting people down. If they want to shoot their dog doing funny tricks, go right ahead. But
yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just like there's a stereo rig that you found, right?
Yeah, there's one on Red User, and obviously this is you know, clearly done tongue in cheek. It was a slow week. It was definitely. Okay. It was a slow week, and that was posted by Dan Sturm on Red User, and it's quite funny. It's a massive thing, you know, tons and tons of sort of Arri grips and Manfrotto clamps and to mount two iPhone 3GSs next to each other on a Manfrotto head. It's brilliant. It's a bit of fun. And yeah, that's the spirit it was posted in. However, and it looks great. It'll be a bit of fun. But however, Zacuto, and I love Zacuto stuff. It's brilliant. Some very, very, very nice bits and pieces. And they do great rigs. But as you say, I think they are jumping on the bandwagon here a little bit with their, I've just announced a 3G mount, which is essentially like a pistol grip with an iPhone clamp at the top of it. But I mean, I can totally understand if you've got an iPhone, great. It's video on demand. You've got it in your pocket. You're always going to have it with you. As you say, you're on the grassy knoll. Oh, I'll roll on this. But these accessories require a conscious effort to head out the door with one of these in exactly. your hand. You know, I'm going to video something. I'm going to constantly walk around with this massive rig. I mean, it's beautifully done, you know, not taking anything away from them. And I'm sure they'll sell a lot of them and it'll be fantastic. But, and I suppose one thing about this is that you could adapt, that they have got a lot of bits and pieces, a lot of Meccano stuff. If you do have one of those, you know, the Sanyo Exacti cameras, that you could, you know, strap it on something like this. And you do, that is one thing with these little tiny cameras and the LX3 and the 5D, as you've found. If you don't have any kind of mount on these things, the finest, because the cameras have no mass, really, the finest amount of camera vibration comes through straight to the lens. The 5D, even with a big lens on it, I've seen incredibly fine little tiny, almost like the pulse of the blood through your hand comes through right through to the lens. So you definitely do, as everyone has found, that's why there's such a mass of rigs on the market for 5Ds and the like. But please, you know, if you're making this conscious effort to head out don't make the conscious effort to film anything beyond, you know, cats playing the piano, with iPhone 3GS. Other than that, move on. So it's, I don't know, I just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Hey, moving on. There's a really nice piece of Red One footage on RedUser.net, which was, I think, done a little while ago, but it's really cool. It's some guys skydiving with the Red One. Have you seen that?
Yes, it's just, thanks to Tyler, again, to my excellent right-hand man for sending me excellent little clips here and there. This, I'm trying to work out who shot this. I believe it might be Greg Gasson, but also Craig O'Brien is credited for shooting this. First time I've seen 4K footage shot on, you know, shot skydiving essentially, and some, and not just, you know, any old skydiving, but some brilliant skydiving acrobatics. What I believe they have to do to shoot this stuff, to, obviously the 5D is much bigger than most of, than the average skydiving camera. Obviously the guys would go out with an HD cam or a DV cam or with an Arri 235 with a or a little trying to think 70DR or any sort of Bolex or anything you can that's small, as opposed to a, you know, 5 kilo or however much a Red One weighs. It's a lot of weight to strap to your neck. So these guys actually jump out of planes wearing NASCAR neck collars to prevent neck injuries. It's a massive amount of weight on your head, particularly when, obviously, when you deploy your chute and you get those incredible G-forces. So it's... but yeah, the footage has to be seen to believe. I thought, oh yeah, skydiving footage, yeah, that'll look quite good. But it does look outstanding, just partly because it's just so crisp and sharp and gorgeous. So again, we'll put links to that in the show notes. But that is at the moment on Red User quite prominently in the excellent shot on Red area. But yeah, I love it. Have you done anything with skydiving, Mike?
I've not done it. I've not actually even skydived without a camera. I must admit... I don't know. It's one of those things that it never came up and I never sorted out. Have you jumped from planes? You're sort of going,
I've never intentionally jumped from a fully functioning plane.
Unintentionally jumped from someone that was breaking up in midair.
As they say, why would you jump out of a perfectly good aeroplane? I have done something which gave me probably nightmares for months after. I was working on a commercial where we were doing skydiving air-to-air stuff with professional skydiving, you know, air-to-air cameramen. And I had a Arri 3 probably on my shoulder, and I was in a DC-3 at 12,000 feet in the cargo area, standing at the back of a queue of skydivers all ready to run out the door. And I obviously didn't have a chute on, but I had a harness on, and I had a cable going back to a safety cable going back to the superstructure of the plane. So I was essentially running at the open door of an aircraft at 12,000 feet with just a cable, and I think I had a grip holding on to me. But nonetheless, the sheer act of running at an open door of an aircraft with no chute on, just, I literally did for weeks after, just wake up almost the classic kind of movie cold sweat kind of, oh my God, as I replayed it in my head. Super scary. So now every time I see that shot, that classic shot of the running out the door, where obviously the person running has the camera on their head and they run out the door and then they keep going, that last few feet where you go from stop right through it to out into the fresh air, that last little bit just chills me to the core. So I don't know if I ever got collared into some weird alternate universe where I was actually going to and or allowed to skydive. I don't think I could get past that. I don't think I could get past the door, I think. So very, very...
Okay.
What is good fun. I love it.
What is the worst situation that you've been in to film in?
Probably, I mean, worst is always also really cool.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
The thing I've done, I've been in choppers where, with nose mounts, shooting nose mounts where, essentially where you bolt the camera right under the front of, mm-hmm. say, a Jet Ranger, the nose cone. And I have been so close to the ground that I swear you could have shot the shot with a hi-hat, and we've landed and I've looked at the base plate of the camera and there's a little grinding on the bottom of the camera, whereas literally we've been so close to the ground, just doing, like, you know, literally a foot off the deck following a car where you then sort of raise up over the car and then looked at the camera later on and go, oh, that was close. We've been doing some machining. Up camera cranes that have fallen off camera cranes that have collapsed at 30 feet and landed on my ass. I don't know. That's probably
I was
the worst situation is probably...
Night. I was doing dinner last night that I was shooting this tiger once, and I know, tell me if I told you the story, but I'm shooting this tiger in a blue screen environment. I was the VFX super, of course, and so there's a blue screen stage, and there's a tiger which has got a handler. The handler has a large chain attached to the tiger's collar, and he's holding it. But it has to walk over this kind of blue screen set, and it bumps into something because it doesn't sort of register the depth because it's all blue, and decides it doesn't want to go in this blue screen stage bit.
Right.
Now, give you the picture.
By the fact that there's no perspective. Yeah. It's like a blue screen psych.
Exactly, a bit like that, yeah.
Right, and right.
Now imagine the scene, because the rest of the crew are up a scissor lift, and there are only three or four people on the ground. There's the DOP, the handler, the guy with the gun, and me. And I say to the guy with the gun, as the tiger lets out a roar that at my DNA level registered with, drop what you're doing and run, I went, I'm really glad I'm standing next to you. And the guy with the gun looks at me really nonchalantly and goes, why? And I say, because you've got a gun. And he goes, that won't do you any good, mate. It's a tranquilizer. That's to protect the tiger. It takes 15 minutes to take effect. I need to finish with you and wandered off for dessert. Right. And I'm like,
It'll be having a nice after meal nap.
So I'm now staring at the handler, who is being dragged across the concrete floor by, like, he's standing up, right? But standing up with his weight, putting his shoulder into it, dragged across by the tiger. I say, well, why the hell am I down here with you? And he looks at me and goes, the guy with the gun, and goes, mate, I've got no idea.
No idea, mate. That's a situation where a 30-foot scissor lift is a nice, safe place to be.
Yeah, I was like, and then I was thinking about it later, and I thought, well, you know what? If I was in that scissor lift and it decided to climb it up, I'm not 100% convinced that it wouldn't have been able to.
I reckon you could get up that sort of scissor lift in about 3 seconds, mate. There, as you say, there is something very, very DNA inducing in a lion's roar.
I'm telling you, I've been to those expensive stereo shops that you go to in the separate little room where they have the really expensive kit, and they say, check out this subwoofer, and they put on something, and you go, oh, that's good.
That was nothing
compared to the way my soul resonated and vibrated with the deep, deep, deep subwoofer roar of this tiger saying, I'm not going in your stupid blue screen psych again. I don't care what the punts over there with the levels and stuff in wants me to do. That's it. I'm out of here.
Okay.
Anyway, I digress.
I digress, very much so.
Getting back to Red Center business for a second.
It was a slow week.
It is a slow week. I wanted to play that clip for you that we had from Stu, because, as I say, we're not here shooting tigers, we're here shooting with DLC. I've got to say, we've had some really, really great shoots. Jason, on the first day, we went down to the fish markets and shot down there at dawn. On the second day, we had a model shoot on the streets of Ginza. And you know how you have a problem always with those sort of pickup shots where you don't really have permission to shut down the entire Ginza district to do it?
Well, yes, I did wonder when you were talking about what you were doing, like, especially when you were talking about going to the Tokyo fish markets.
Well, we were on the streets of Tokyo in the Ginza district, which is sort of a very expensive area of real estate, probably one of the most expensive in the world. But think, you know, Park Avenue, Bond Street. And we wanted to shoot for a promo that we're going to make as an exercise in FXPHD. So we're shooting on the Canon 5D Mark II. It was on the Red Rock micro rig. But we shot the model. And admittedly, we didn't have a big crew, but, you know, we had hair and makeup and first ADs and stuff.
Okay.
I swear we shot the model 5, maybe 6 feet away from 3 policemen. But because we were shooting on what looked like a stills camera, no one for a second stopped us and bothered us. You know, I mean, we were like, okay, like, let's get a shot before we get busted. And people told me, you know, they should have a sacrificial person to get arrested for not having permits, because this is kind of how it runs, and none
it's
of that.
It's funny that, isn't it? Because even if that was the smallest, even if that was like your HVX 200, here, I'm getting things wrong now, they would have stopped you.
Yeah.
Even a small, you know, or even if it was just a little EX3 or something like that, they would have stopped you. But, yeah, there is something definitely. And it works the same way with the subjects, you know, with people. Definitely, we've seen a lot of footage where if you'd not been on a 5D, people would have go, hey, no filming. Because it's a stills camera, they just, you know, somehow it's less threatening, or it's less of an issue enough to say, you know, for a cop to stop one camera from shooting, but not the other.
Look, I mean, we shot this giant killer robot, which was, you know, 5 stories high. And there was a lot of people there with what?
Of course you did. Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
With,
you
didn't mention cameras. That bit. Yeah, a lot of people there with cameras. And, of course, our camera was probably one of the better ones. But a lot of them were there with DSLRs, and point-and-shoots, of course, but a lot of them with DSLRs and, you know, Canons and Nikons and stuff. And so we just fitted right in. And so that was good. And the other thing that's great is, you know, the interchangeable lenses, like just being able to put on. We put on lens babies and, you know, all sorts of really cool lenses and shot a whole lot of Fantastic. Different types of stuff. But anyway, enough of me talking about it. Let's cross to the recording I did previously. And I actually, you know, grabbed Stu on the train down and I asked him, you know, basically, what are we doing here in Japan? What is he shooting?
Well, we're here to do the FX PhD course on DSLR cinematography.
Now, we're not recording this in the middle of an aircraft hangar, though it feels like the middle of an aircraft hangar.
Yeah, we're on the Shinkansen from Tokyo to Kyoto, and we're traveling at 180-some miles an hour through beautiful, rustic Japanese countryside.
Yeah, it really is actually astounding. I mean, it may sound a bit noisy, but it actually is astounding how smooth and quiet this train is.
Yeah, it is awesome, and the scenery is gorgeous if you can get a glimpse of it as it whips by.
So tell me, how are you sort of finding shooting here?
Well, it's been great, and it's been, I think, a particularly good way to illustrate some of the points of why you would want to use a DSLR for cinematography. We've shot in a lot of locations that are notoriously difficult to film in with proper film equipment. Some quite famously so, you know, set locations that were used in Lost in Translation and where people have been kicked out and basically unable to shoot with traditional equipment, and yet we've actually had a run of nothing but good luck with everything we've tried to shoot, sometimes inches away from the police. And
that was astounding. I mean, really, you have a stills camera and nobody bats an eyelid, and yeah. So the fact we're shooting video didn't seem to bother, because no one, of course, sort of cared.
Yeah, and in fact, particularly here, I couldn't even get anyone to bat an eyelash when I had my camera all rigged up with the Red Rock micro rig. It just sort of seems like people are really accustomed to seeing cameras and really nice cameras and gadgets and gizmos. No one's intimidated by it or even gives you a wayward glance.
I've got to say, I think some of the locations we've been at, I'm joking, of course, but if you sent an art direction team in to make them perfect, it is hard to imagine they could have done any better.
Yeah, even as we were just stepping onto the train, I couldn't believe the beautiful little rotating spinny orange lights to kind of, you know, reflecting off the side of the train to warn you that, you know, to watch your step as you got on.
And when we were at the fish markets, the quality of the footage was just, I mean, there's almost no way you could shoot that didn't feel like it was perfectly art directed.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the thing is that Tokyo is such a beautiful and visually dense place that is so notoriously difficult to shoot in, and you want so desperately to capture it, capture what's unique and special about it, you really do need to resort to clever and highly mobile production strategy here.
So what have you been shooting on here?
Well, I've been primarily shooting on my Canon 5D Mark II, both stills and video, with a variety of lenses, including some kind of fun ones, like the Lens Baby and a couple others.
And are there any sort of tips or tricks on how you set up your 5D to make that kind of work? I mean, is there anything that do you need to sort of play much with the settings, or is it...
Yeah, a couple things that I've done. One is to give myself a programmed user mode that puts me into the type of manual control that I want to have. And then the other is something that I wasn't ever used to playing with on my SLR, which is the picture mode settings, which don't, of course, have any impact when you're shooting stills raw, but do actually have a big effect on the quality of the video. I think when people first started shooting with the 5D, the feeling was that the video was kind of contrasty and lacked dynamic range, but you can actually recover some of that if you carefully set up a picture mode that turns down things like sharpening and contrast and saturation, and enable the highlight tone priority mode, where it really helps you try to get every last bit that the sensor is capturing.
it's ironic, isn't it? But we're so used to shooting RAW, and yet when you go to shoot video, actually what you're doing is effectively going back to shooting JPEG.
That's exactly right. So all of these settings, yeah, affect your JPEG stills, but they also affect the quality of the video that you're recording.
So I guess at the end of the day, say the shoot that you did in the Ginza with the fashion model, do you feel like the stuff you got is stuff that you would professionally use, or do you feel like it's still a pretty big compromise?
Well, you know, I wonder there if we would have maybe been able to get away with a Red. You know, it almost feels like we would have, but if we hadn't, you know, that would have been it, you know. As it was, it worked perfectly, and I'm really happy with the footage we got.
I mean, to your eye, it looks satisfactory.
We all know that there are enormous compromises with these cameras, but the trade-off, of course, is that in exchange for those, you get to shoot something that you might not otherwise. And I think the Ginza shoot is a perfect example of that, where we got exactly the shots that we wanted. The difficulties in terms of things like pulling focus and would have been realities even with the Red camera. The only way to solve those would have been to have, you know, an external monitor, an HD monitor, those kinds of things. Suddenly, you've got enough of a production that we would have attracted some attention. We wouldn't have been able to get out of the way when a truck came in to unload some deliveries for the restaurant that we were standing right in front of. As to whether or not we could use the footage professionally, I think that we could. Maybe not for high-definition air, but certainly for web or standard definition. I've looked at it, and I think it looks really good.
Well, thanks for taking time to talk to us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Having so much fun here.
I was quite noisy, but, you know, I'm surprised that this is on a bullet train, right?
This is on a bullet train. We realized after we'd recorded that we were actually in the noisiest part of the bullet train, but it took us a while to work that out. It was also the bit where we weren't disturbing other passengers, so, you know, it's good
not to be
offensive. But, you know, Stu's such a great guy. We just had a ball shooting with him.
Oh, I'm jealous. Excellent. So we had an interesting email just after we last episode where I rabbited on forever about LTO tape drives and backups. Had an email from David Bailey just today. He is actually a computer engineer for his day job. He says he's seen LTO 4 drives or tapes die. Just within 50 uses, within 50 arrays and writes. And he says, essentially the point is that this is the most bulletproof solution there is out there, and it's not bulletproof. So essentially, as a corporation, they essentially have a their edict is to dump their tapes every 12 to 18 months. So, you know, a system which essentially is meant to be bulletproof, and you're meant to be able to have this, you know, shelf life of 5, 10, 15, whatever years, their workflow is to, I guess, dump them over and copy them over every year and a half.
But I think that's because if 50, okay, let's say it was 50, which I think is, I'm surprised by that number. But if that was sort of rewriting every week, you could kind of run it up and want to get rid of it after maybe 12 or 18 months. But a lot of the applications we've talked about is, you know, you write stuff out to the LTO and you'd be lucky if you get 3 uses out of the tape, you know. And also, you will be validated when you write out to know whether it has written out correctly. But I wouldn't want to let people sort of be put off by this, because there are millions of examples I know of people losing stuff on disk drives. LTO is still...
Oh, absolutely. It's a pity there's nothing else. There's no other... You know, I just look at the idea of a tape and just... Yes, it is, you know, a great way to save stuff off, but it is definitely, you know, not going to last.
I just But I think another interesting point that he made, which is perhaps more interesting to me than the LTO thing, was that he was discussing Red Cine, and this is a point that we did not make, that Red Cine X is going to allow plugins and have basically a lot of hooks for people to add. So what you're seeing now is third-party accessories to the Red workflow pipeline maybe turn into OFX-type plugins that would be placed into Red Cine X, thus extending it as part of the app, in much the same way that Aperture has tons of plugins for extending stuff on stills photography. And so my assertion about it being, well, you know, how much is it going to be useful without things like EDLs and third-party conforms, if that is not included and that does come as a plugin, and assuming that that all, you know, is fairly integrated, that may be a way forward.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, as I say, my main issue, not issue with it, but I mean, my main wish for the Red Seeing X thing is, having seen it and seen a nice interface, it works the way my brain works, and it's a nice sort of simpler layout and less geeky to me, and just appeals to me. So I just would love it not to be just, you know, the solution for the, you know, one for the soccer mums. And hopefully, as you say, with these extensions, as you, I guess you can plug in stuff like monkey extract, and, you know, be able to do EDLs in and out and stuff like that, and essentially do what I do, what we do as a data grade, where you have an EDL and you have your clips and it will build it, and you can do your tweaks and import it and export it with handles or without. So yes, my wish for it is to extend like this. So that's excellent. So thank you, David, for getting back to us and enlightening us. So we appreciate it.
Now, because I'm traveling, we haven't been able to do an interview this week for the show, so this is going to be a bit of a short show, plus there's actually not much happening and not much news. But we won't run the show out just to pad it out. But we will say this: if you come across stuff like the skydiving footage, that's a really good example of stuff that's been shot with digital cinematography, please let us know. Send us an email at red@fxguide.com. We'd love to hear from you. We do really appreciate all the people that send stuff in, and people that comment on the Twitters and stuff. And I'm going to have to head off anyway, Jace, because I've got to get over to this temple for a shoot this afternoon, and then over to the lake house. So it's been great talking to you, my friend.
Have a great trip, and we'll talk to you when you're back in town.
Excellent. Check us out on...
Actually, we should do where we can find yous.
Yep.
Are you blogging while you're away?
I am adding stuff at fxguide.com, and you can check me out there, or on the Twitters as Mike Seymour. And
fabulous.
Chase?
I'm twitter.com/Wingrove, or my reel and stuff at jasonwingrove.com. And as always, yeah, let us know if you've got at anything you like at red@fxguide.com.
Until next time, talk to you later, guys.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please email us red@fxguide.com. Copyright 2009, FX Guide, LLC.